This week's episode of Radio Labyrinth is produced by Dennis Davis, Wendy Muller, Mike Spittler, and Sean Hall.
Yeah, I guess you could warm up an apple in many different ways.
Two Faces Radio.
One of the programs which you hear daily on many of these mutual stations begins like this.
Iron. It makes up most of the Earth's core and is in our blood. It's also the reason we're here, for the most part. In 1844, the Marquette Iron Range was discovered. And soon after, North Michigan Iron was building the country. Shipped through Marquette's harbor and across the Great Lakes to be made into steel for railroads, skyscrapers, ships, and bridges. So if you like this train bridge, you have iron to thank. Hello, my name is Joe Pera, and unlike previous family generations, I'm not a miner, but a soft-handed choir teacher who is just in awe of Michigan's geological splendor. Simply put, the Upper Peninsula is a rock hound's paradise, and I'd like to introduce you to some of the most special of our rocks and minerals.
The Buffalo Bills are the best team in the NFL. I'd understand if you disagree on the grounds that your Patriots have beaten us the last 24 of 26 meetings, and that we haven't made the playoffs since 1999. But this year, when our season really falls apart around week 9, people in Buffalo will be reminded that there's life outside of football, and that maybe, just maybe, it's time to take the kids on a drive to the lake again. The Bills do this every year on purpose. They'll win a few early on to show that they could win them all if they really wanted to. And then, around mid-November, turn the ball over 3 times a game to bring families together. Is quarterback E.J. Manuel upset about the interception he just threw? Hardly. Because he knows that the worse he plays this Sunday, the fuller the pumpkin patches will be the following Sunday.
It's time for Radio Labyrinth with Tim Andrews, Jeff Leboff, Stephanie Swain, Autumn Fisher, and sometimes effing Ira Malkin.
Our guest today is Joe Pera. Joe Pera is the star of Joe Pera Talks With You, a live-action comedy show on Atlanta's own Adult Swim. It premiered in May of this year, and all the episodes are available on demand or at AdultSwim.com. The show was produced and created by Joe Pera and his company, Chestnut Walnut Unlimited. Can you hear me, Joe?
Yep.
Joe, welcome to Radio Labyrinth. It's a podcast that we do here in Atlanta where we talk about pop culture and television, and we're all big fans of Adult Swim, and we're all fans of you, so thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, anytime.
Do you come down here very often?
No, I've been meaning to visit. I hope to in the near future, though.
Well, we'll take you out. You'll have a good time with us. We're not partiers. I don't know if you're a big partier. I'm just going based on your persona on TV that, you know, you might want to go to the Claremont Lounge with us or hang out at one of these cool bars. You get into the bar scene?
I'm not really a party guy.
No? What do you like to do for fun when you're not working on TV?
I guess do stand-up, which is kind of similar. It's a boring answer, but do stand-up, read.
You're originally from Buffalo, New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you got started in comedy, was there an avenue for that, or did you have to leave and go to like a major city?
There was some. Kristen Becker kind of built the whole, she's a comedian for who was in Buffalo for a long time. She had a couple of shows that she ran. One was at a bar called Nietzsche's, and it was fun. I was scared to death to do it, but I met, I don't know, when it would, when I did well there, I knew I had a little bit of, I knew I didn't, I wasn't completely terrible, but there's a, there were only, I think, like two open mics there of a week in Buffalo, and New York has them every single night of the week. So in order to really get good and run sets and jokes as often as possible, I realized that I would probably have to move to New York. There's more mics and shows in Buffalo now because of Kristen and other comics that came after. There's more of a scene in Buffalo, but at the time it seemed pretty clear that if I wanted to make a full-time career out of it, I would have to go to New York.
The host of the radio show that I'm on in Atlanta, he is from Rochester, and he started out doing comedy in Rochester, but he said that in order to...
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he said, but in order to keep doing it and get better at it, he had to, you know, go around the state.
Yeah, there's only... you can only get people out because if you're, you know... takes time to develop material and stand up. So even if you are able to do enough shows in Buffalo, you'd be doing the same jokes over and over again for a lot of the same people.
Yeah.
So there are ways to do it. That's neat that he started in Rochester.
Oh yeah, he's from Rochester. I'm from Elmira, and we're both on the air in Atlanta. It's wonderful.
Oh, I didn't know that. You're from Elmira?
Yeah, you ever been?
Briefly, I think I drove through it.
Mark Twain's buried there. In case you didn't know that.
Somebody said that. How did that happen?
Well, he married a woman from Buffalo named Sue Ann Langdon. I believe she was from Buffalo.
Yeah.
And he wrote some of his books there, and he passed away, so that's where he was buried. The Langdon family, they have a big plot at a cemetery in Elmira, and he has a big obelisk with a you know, a metal plate with his face on it, and people will leave whiskey bottles and cigars there for him.
That's wild. Who would have thought? I knew that he was editor of the Buffalo News for a while, but not. I didn't know that he was buried in Elmira.
Oh, yeah, and everything there is named Clemens Center This or Clemens Parkway or the Mark Twain Motor Inn. But
well, why not? If Mark Twain dies in your town, you should try and make the most of it.
I agree. That whole, you know, growing up in that area, I still, even though I'm down here, I still think about it all the time, and the Finger Lakes and how it'd be nice to be able to live up there someday again.
Yeah, same.
Do you still live in Buffalo, or do you get back there very often?
I visit my parents every few months. They're still there, and most of my family's there. So I go back pretty frequently.
Now, you grew up a Bills fan, I'm assuming, based on the stand-up bit that I heard on YouTube. Are you still a Bills fan?
Yeah. I mean, I like the team. There's I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the owner, Terry Pegula, right now, so it makes it kind of hard to root for the team, knowing that he's the owner.
What's up with him? I don't know much about him.
He's a fracking billionaire.
Oh.
He came in and tried to clear his legacy by buying a couple sports teams. He owns the Sabres too, but
okay.
They ran an article in the Times, which was a transcript of the players and owners meeting after the about what to do about the players kneeling on the during the anthem, and he was pretty oblivious to the issues, and he kept on the article. He kept on making maritime references. And he's just kind of out of touch. And
maritime.
I always love the Bills, but it's just hard to root for them right now. And
I understand.
It was.
You know when it was really hard to root for them? The year after you were born, when they went on the 4-year Super Bowl run. That was very difficult. I mean, you rooted for him, and then the Super Bowl would come along, and then about halftime, you could probably go outside and not worry about it too much. But I'm kind of rambling about the Bills, and let's get back and talk about your show, which is why you came on. The show just wrapped the first season. I'm hoping that there's going to be a second season. Can you give us any details about that?
We're not quite sure yet, but fingers crossed, of course. I think that we had a lot of fun, and now that we've established the characters and the themes of the show, it'd be kind of fun to just continue them. And there's a lot of, I mean, we had seasons worth of ideas in the writing of this one season and stuff that never made it to the air. It'd be nice to get the opportunity to do them. But I don't know. We went into this one having the philosophy that, like, if this is our only chance to make a TV show, we want to make it as good as possible. And really, me and Marty, the director, and all the writers and actors, we just kind of gave all our time and energy to it. So I don't know.
You can tell when you watch it that it's a labor of love, that everybody's kind of enjoying what they're doing. And for a network like Adult Swim, which is either maniacal comedies, stuff that's really out there, this is kind of a grounded show where it's just normal people. And what I like about it is you're not making fun of the people, at least to me. I don't think you're making fun of it. You are creating characters that are interesting, but not exactly the kind of people that are in your face, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I think you don't have to do a lot to make people interesting or funny. I started when I was in college, I used to make videos with my grandparents for my first kind of like co-stars, I guess. And this is just funny and different, and they were interesting personalities, and you didn't have to do a lot to make them funny. Just let people be themselves. I think a lot of actors on the show, if they're not non-actors, they're just kind of doing versions of themselves, and I think that it's done a lot on TV, but really I just kind of wanted it to have a feel like it was made by a bunch of friends who got other friends to act in it, because then it just it's not a homemade feel, but...
Well, no, I know what you mean.
The early videos I used to do, you know, you just get anybody you could to act in it and get anybody to shoot and direct. And obviously, it's a bigger scale than that, but the goal was to kind of maintain that feel that was just made by a group of friends, because it was. And I hope that that comes across. I think it does.
I think so, too. It makes me ask this question, is how much of it is scripted versus how much of it is improvised? Is there a part of it that's improvised that you keep in?
I kind of talk pretty slow on the show. So in an 11-minute show, I got to make every word count.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really quite a bit to get to. So a lot of almost all the lines are scripted. Except for Connor O'Malley, who plays Mike Melski. He likes to, he's could think of funnier things than I can write. So he's great he's the one who probably improvises the most. And I did some improv with Gene, but, like the moments that there are kind of like, moments that were like on the wedding episode, we have a lot of just extras dancing, and they danced all day, and we filmed them, and we found the funny moments in that. There's a scene where Joe Firestone is walking into a bar that I love, and she bumps into the door and by accident, and we ended up using that just because I think it's funny. So we embraced a lot of kind of like the acting and improv in terms of stuff like that, but in terms of my lines, is pretty scripted tightly.
The stuff with the chorus kids in the season finale seemed like it was unscripted. It just felt natural.
That was unscripted. We had about 30 to 40 minutes with each kid, and I had 12 to 15 questions lined up, and I kind of improvised that scene with them. I wish that we could have used more of it in the episode, because they had such really smart and touching things to say about it, and their perspective on things is really nice to hear. But unfortunately, in a 22-minute episode with a lot of scenes, we only got to use, I think, less than 2 minutes. But yeah, it is, that was all improvised, and it was really fun to do that with the kids.
When you were, well, you can put it on the Blu-ray when that comes out.
I hope so.
Yeah. So you growing up, I know the show takes place in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, a place that probably doesn't figure into the country's zeitgeist very often. How did you decide on that comparative to Buffalo? I mean, is it the same kind of feel? The people are generally the same, you think?
Similar but different. There's a lot of things I've been thinking about it myself, what drew me to it. But it's a lot of similarities. Long winters with lots of snow, because Buffalo gets the lake effect snow from Lake Erie. Shipping, industrial past, a love of hockey and beer is kind of shared between the cities. But the UP and Marquette is surrounded by a lot more nature, and being located right on the shore of Lake Superior, the one street just empties out right into the lake. And the town, it's very pretty, and there's so much, a lot of other nature up there. And there's kind of people in the UP are very independent minded. It's a slightly more isolated place than other cities. And I just was drawn to the way that they dealt with the winters, and which last quite a long time, and being in a slightly more isolated area, because I think my character on the show is a little bit isolated himself, so it kind of was a good fit in that way.
And you have to be sturdy to live in those places, you know. You can't be weak.
Yeah, I mean, Buffalo gets a lot of snow, but I never felt cold like I felt shooting up there.
Oh yeah,
it's stuff that just will cut right through your coat, and even no matter what you wear, it's hard to be outside for a length of time.
And yet, to the people that live there, yeah, they're probably like, "Well, gosh, this is normal."
Yeah, yeah, and they're all tricks, and they buy the right clothing and stuff. But and they all, they'll snowmobile all winter and know how to, and love being outside. And I like, I guess I shouldn't generalize, but I like the way that a lot of them, it doesn't stop the way that they live. They just kind of they deal with it, and they don't complain. It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Down here, and I've been here for 20 some years, I miss the winter. I miss the lake effect. We got the tail end of it where I grew up. It would kind of die out a little bit, and then the Finger Lakes, they'd pick up some moisture and then dump, you know, not like in Buffalo, of course, but I miss that winter time. Then I go home and it's freezing cold for 2 weeks, and I think, well, you know, it's time to go back to Atlanta.
Yeah, it's hard once you're not in it. It's hard to kind of relearn how to endure a winter like that. Because even New York, it's not quite as gray as Buffalo is in the winter, and I forgot how that wears on you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's similar in the UP. It's just it can get to you if you let it.
Now I want to ask you about your influences in comedy, because you know, obviously you developed this character. You developed by doing stand up and working on bits and. You know, in the TV show and the Adult Swim stuff, but who influenced you when you were younger? I mean, growing up, who did you watch on TV? Because I imagine that maybe my comedy heroes are different from yours because you grew up, you know, in a different era. So I'm just curious about that, because you don't, again, I love the fact that you're not just one of those in-your-face comics. It takes, you have to listen. You have to listen to Joe Pera to hear what he's saying in order to laugh. I hope that doesn't sound pretentious, but that's how I feel.
I guess I like stand up a lot. I like doing it, but I would say that I was more influenced by, say, like Christopher Guest mm-hmm. and his movies, as well as I really like the British Office a lot. Although Zach Galifianakis' Comedy Central Presents was pretty great to see. I don't know. I watched all of the ton of 80s movies, 70s movies with my dad.
Right.
I liked them a lot. But I'd say, yeah, between those filmmakers and my grandparents themselves and my family, I'd say that those are my biggest influences. I think that, like I said earlier, people are just funny if you let them be funny. And like Christopher Guest knew that, and he kind of celebrated people and their interesting personalities. And I think that was probably a big influence.
What's your favorite one of those, that string of movies that he did?
I like Waiting for Guffman, I think, and then A Mighty Wind after that. I don't think a lot of people say Mighty Wind is their favorite, but I thought that the way that it ends is nice.
I like Eugene Levy's frailty in A Mighty Wind. I think that's a very special character, and I enjoy all of them too, but that one, it's different, and you're right. People don't say, oh, that's my favorite one. But his character to me is the most interesting, just because he's afraid. And but he's so talented.
Yeah, I like it a lot too.
Now I was checking out your Instagram page. You sure like tomatoes. And it's curious to me because my grandpa used to grow tomatoes, and I've never liked them. But I thought they were.
Really?
No, I don't like. I like stuff that's made out of tomatoes, but I don't like tomatoes. It was just interesting. What got you into that?
Well, my grandfather's grew tomatoes too, but that's all I'm going to say. I think it's more fun not to explain it. There is a reason behind it, but I prefer not to talk about it.
Did you garden with your grandpa when you were younger?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I like to pick rocks out of it. Drive around in the old tractor and fill up the back thing in the spring, you know, in the late winter, you fill it with rocks, take the rocks someplace else. Then get the hoe out. And I tried gardening myself, and it turns out I'm not very good at it.
Really?
No.
I guess the nice thing about tomato plants is that they're pretty easy to grow and hard to screw up if you just water them every day.
Yeah, but then my wife likes them. I could maybe do that. I can't eat them when they're raw. I can eat them when they're in things. I just, you know, I don't know what it is. I'm just not a big fan. Even though they grew cherry tomatoes, and I really wanted to eat those because I thought they were pretty. That's what my grandma used to say. You kid, you thought they were pretty.
That's funny.
You want to go picking huckleberries? No. I don't like bugs. All those wonderful things we got to do. I had a couple more questions about the show. Was it hard to get Baba O'Reilly for Reed's The Church Bulletin episode?
A little bit. I think we always had it in mind, and then I think we got a little lucky. I don't think it's the easiest song or most affordable to license. Adult Swim was really nice about it, and then somehow we got a hold of the right people to license it, and also we got the permission. It was very fortunate, but I don't know how that would have worked otherwise if we had to use a different song. But
I love that you called the disc jockey at the classic rock station, because when I was growing up, if I had a question about music or anything, for some reason I said, well, I'll just call this DJ. They'll know. They know everything.
It's a nice thing.
Usually they're all drugged out in the 70s and 80s. Hey, kid, I'll tell you. Yeah, it's the Who.
Yeah.
This episode's going to come out 4th of July week. What do you like to do for Independence Day?
Oftentimes I go home to Buffalo, and I'll be there with my family. We'll watch the fireworks. They have cook hamburgers and hot dogs. Pretty standard. I'm not sure this year, though.
Do you have a big fireworks display that you go to in Buffalo?
Yeah, they have one at the university, and also they've got one at the Buffalo Bisons, the minor league team. They have a good fireworks display. It's every Friday, though, so you can kind of catch it throughout the summer. I'd recommend it.
We have Stone Mountain here in Georgia, where they do a laser show and a fireworks show every Saturday night, and you could watch Confederate generals being chased off by Union generals.
I never heard of that before.
It's a big, big mountain. You should, if you get down here, like if they bring you down to Adult Swim, Stone Mountain, and then in Marietta they have a big Kentucky Fried Chicken with a gigantic chicken head with a clock on it, and they call it the Big Chicken. That's pretty cool.
Really?
Yep.
Sounds interesting.
It's fun. Joe, I really appreciate you coming on our show. I only reach out to people that we like.
Thank you for having me.
And I wanted to tell you one thing. I was watching some videos on YouTube. I liked Zero F's Boyd.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was... Yeah, I didn't... The Chris Gethard show, they basically have a thing every year where viewers write in, and they basically write a list of characters that they want to see, and then Chris gets performers to portray those characters. And that's what I was given, and that's what I guess I did. I don't know.
It was very funny.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
And then one last question comes from my co-host, Jeff, who had reached out to you initially. He wants to know if you approve of the official Boy Scout campfire apple or only the warm apple.
What's that? I don't know that.
The campfire apple looks like it has cinnamon and all sorts of things on it. It looks very difficult and elaborate.
Yeah. But they cook it for a while, right?
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm about only making it warm.
How do you make an apple warm?
You just put it on the fire for a shorter amount of time.
And then you eat it?
Until it's warm, not hot. If it gets hot, it's ruined.
So you just warm it up a little bit. Can you do it in the microwave if you're not camping?
I guess. It's not quite the same, but yeah, I guess you could warm up an apple in many different ways.
Cool. I'm going to try that when I get home. Well, actually, I'll ask my wife to do it. We have we just planted a fig tree, so if the fig tree survives, I'll have figs, and then I'll start growing tomatoes again.
Yeah, good luck. I can't remember what the fig tree stands for, but I know that their symbol is something.
Oh, you know a lot about trees, don't you?
A little bit.
I don't know,
I can't remember the fig tree. What do they do?
They make figs.
It's true. It's not untrue.
Oh, man.
Fig trees make figs. That's a good way to end the interview.